Got 25 to 75 people in your company? Check out knowyourcompany.com, software that helps companies like Airbnb know their company better.
It is the Chicago Verse podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists and industry and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
Haima Black, live from Virgin Hotel for Dynasty Podcasts. We're here another week. Shout out Virgin Hotel for hosting us. Shout out Mallory, new addition to the podcast team. She is keeping us on the air and recording. And I'm here with the man of the hour, Kevin Koval. How are you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Dude, thank you for coming up.
Oh, yeah.
No, we've had you on the podcast a few times, and it is always a pleasure. So I'm really happy to have you here.
No, I appreciate you, man. And thanks for, you know, and congrats on all your success, too.
Dude, likewise.
No,
likewise.
Man, you guys are blowing up. You know what I mean?
Again, likewise.
Yeah.
So welcome to our hour of Kevin and I complimenting each other and being like, no, you look very nice today.
Which you do, by the way, man. I mean, you should, yeah.
Here it is. No, you hang up
okay,
first.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
So, dude, you have really cool stuff happening right now. The biggest thing happening right now, A People's History of Chicago. This is the new book, and it comes out in April, correct?
Yeah, the pub date is April, but we got the launch party at the Harold Washington Library March 4th, which is Chicago's birthday,
right,
or Incorporation Day. And so, yeah, we're going to, you know, kind of get live in the library. And then there's an after party at the Chicago Athletic Association that same night.
CAA. Great space.
Yeah.
So can people pick up the book on the 4th? Or?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We'll have all the books in the building. And, you know, I've been working with the Lannan Foundation to get every student in Louder Than a Bomb and every English and history teacher in CPS a copy of the book for the free. So
that's killer.
Yeah,
that's killer. So, you know, we will talk about this book. You know, let's do the quick thing because we've already done this on the podcast before, but just bring people up to speed. Your role with Louder Than a Bomb, Young Chicago Authors. Give us that again.
Yeah, I'm a poet and one of the founders of Louder Than a Bomb, the artistic director of Young Chicago Authors. And yeah, I just, you know, I'm, you know, essentially an educator and organizer in Chicago.
And poet and writer and you're around town and you're a mentor. I think that's a role that's really important because you, through your work with Louder Than a Bomb and as an educator and as a writer, you have mentored a number of young talents, correct?
Yeah, no, I'm really lucky, man. I mean, we are in the midst of, you know, a renaissance in this city. You know, it's the greatest city in the world, also like the most horrific, but right, it's also the best city. And yeah, I mean, you know, young people are definitely changing the way that the city / country runs. And I've been really lucky and privy to a lot of those incredible young geniuses who are, I think, are changing the future for the better. So
no, absolutely. I don't know if there's ever been a time in Chicago where young creatives have had more power and more potential. You know, 20 years ago, I don't know if it was like that. 40 years ago, I don't know if it was like that, where if you were 17 or 19 or 22, you had a platform where you could actually make a real impact.
Yeah, it's a beautiful paradigm shift. And I think, you know, I think folks have utilized the way technology has democratized in order to, you know, have power in their own hands. And I think that speaks, you know, to their intelligence, to their brilliance, to their ingenuity. And yeah, it's dope.
Absolutely. And something I think that's important, and we're going to talk about the book in a moment, but something I think that's important is I think people, for a lot of people outside looking in, they think that this started with Chance, but it's not just Chance. Chance is doing incredible work, but there's been a spirit in this city for a long time.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, like, we are a city of hustlers, you know.
Right.
We're a city, yeah. I mean,
Chance included.
Oh, of course, yeah. And, sure, and he's in the tradition, and, you know, a lot of folks are in the tradition, but this goes, you know, back to hawking shit out like the cart once you get off, the, you know, the boat or the train or, you know, the horse buggy from, you know, from when once you landed.
I mean, it's the guy on the L who's hustling with the.
Yeah. Yo, it's GQ. GQ is one of the first performer beat boxers I saw who was like hustling on the green line, on the red line. It's soldiers at war, you know, out west.
Oh, yeah.
On Harlem, like moving cassettes out the backpack at 10,000 a click.
I lost, you know, $20 on the CTA in high school because I'm not an idiot. I can find the ball. Nope, I lost $20.
I came up on the old Maxwell Street, and so I knew that hustle. And one time I brought my man's Jeff Hoffenberg there, and I'm like, Jeff, please do not play this game, my dude. And he's like, nah, I think I can get
everyone
it. I think I get
the smarter
one. The person before me won. I'm like, my man, that's part of the game.
That's
like,
the mark.
What are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, what is wrong with you? Also, like, they just, like, dapped up in the alley. What? Why did you not know that, you know? And so, yeah. So it's a long, long, and then you see how, like, it is infectious, you know, that spirit of entrepreneurialism.
Right. And it's very much a play. And so in this book that's coming out this spring, in People's History of Chicago, you really go into a history of Chicago, and you are covering it from a very humane and personal level. You're talking about the people who have made up the history of the city, really from the incorporation up to now, up to present day. And this book, it's for anybody. It's essential reading for anybody who loves Chicago. I think essential reading for anyone who lives in Chicago. And what I wanted to do to kind of start us off, if you're cool with it, the last poem in the book, I would love if you could read that. I'm sure people would love to hear me not talking for a minute. And I'm going to let you preface this poem, but this really hit me.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. And we could do it together, too. We could do a little duet if you want.
It's up to you. You tell me.
Yeah?
Sure.
You want like a little popcorn read, maybe? That's going to be fire.
Sure.
All right, good. Yeah, let's just go stanza for stanza.
Okay.
In you know, non-poetic terms, that's like paragraph for paragraph.
Sure.
You with me, though. You're a college professor. I don't
Something
need to
like
tell you shit.
All right, I'm going to let you lead with this.
All right, Chicago has my heart. Don't ask me to go. Don't force me to leave. When the coasts call, when the rents rise, when the city I know is unrecognizable, it's mine, not alone, not to own.
Chicago has my heart, at the lake, on the train, in the first days of spring that remind us why we live here at all, have bodies, can use them outside the cold, restrictions of clothing, the confines of neighborhood.
Chicago has my heart. The land I'm most confident. Give me an address, I'll get us there. I know the grid, blocks, got people in these streets. Students whose family run the breakfast spot on 79th near Haki, who's still here building temples to black lives, monuments to Mama Gwendolyn.
My family is here, my father, 6 blocks from me in Albany Park. The mayor of the city's broke dreams. He holds them in his growing belly. His breaking heart falling, asleep in front of the television, chatting through the night in his taxi. The city with money calls an Uber. He drives new residents to wherever they wish to go. Thank God. For the hustle, the hustler, my father, the kindest, most incompetent businessman here. He doesn't swindle or cheat. He is honest and fair. What a sucker the city makes of sweet men.
Like me, I guess. I just want justice and someone to read poems to you. Chicago, my heart, is all the people who make it. Who are making it barely in the 77 hoods. I hate the viaducts, the millionaires who urban planned them from the suburbs they resurrect downtown.
Chicago, you have my heart, my whole history, my people. You saved seeking refuge here, tucked in apartments in Ukrainian village in North Lawndale. You saved them from history while destroying others. My mother left, my brother moved, my friends gone. Too much rent, debt, you killed some off. You are a ghost mound. I stalk still, Chicago. You have my heart, split in two like the city and stories you tell. But I am one, not two. I am one. Second will not do. You can't continue to break us in two. In remade, refurbished, renewed models for the few.
Chicago has my heart, but my head, my hands, my body with the people who build, who have a limit and can break and tear it down and stop it from becoming. What's it becoming? What is it becoming? Chicago has my heart, but the heart of those who call this home, who root and champion the losers and villains who run this place, who put on for the shitty pizza in Arctic weather.
We will turn our backs on the very land we are locked in, turn our backs on the capital wage slaves you've made us become. We will burn your memory in effigy and house dance in the afterglow.
We rise, Chicago. This body politic will rise. Our fire will burn again.
Wow, dude.
Hey,
that
hey,
is
hey, that's good work, man. Yeah.
Thank you for letting me read that with you.
Natural.
You know, got to keep up. But so I was reading through this, and that poem just like, man, it just hit me. And something that I think that's very present in this story is it's kind of a sad story. And it's like there's a thorough line narrative. There's a lot of repeating themes here. And one of the repeating themes are a lot of good men losing and getting taken advantage of in the story of those with power and means building their version of the city. And the winner is getting to tell the history.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with capitalism, that's the problem with white supremacy, that's the problem with patriarchy, and so, you know, part of the work I try to do is try to ensure that there are, you know, multiple spaces for many voices to tell a broader narrative about what it means to live, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And young Chicago authors and everything you do, it accomplishes that. let's get into some logistics of this book. It's an incredible book, and I want a lot of people to be able to read these poems, you know, cold without having to hear them first. But
thanks, man.
I guess bring us into the beginning. Like, when did this start? You've written many books, but when did this project start to come together?
A little while ago, I think I started to write a lot actually about gentrification in Wicker Park in the 90s. And I lived in Wicker Park, and my whole life has revolved around Wicker Park. That my grandfather moved from the Ukraine to the Ukrainian village in 1906. And so my whole life, and that's where Young Chicago Authors is. And so I started to really investigate what were some of the conditions that preceded that moment of gentrification in the early 90s. And so just researching the history of kind of the globalization of an American economy, of a Chicago economy, I just started to dig essentially in the crates and records of Chicago history. And I became more and more fascinated with what I was uncovering. And part of what I wanted to do was, of course, like tell a story about, you know, some of the so-called victors who ultimately are the greatest villains that we have, and also champion the efforts and the victories of working people who we don't often consider. Because the way that Chicago has gone, it pushes the rest of the country to be more just, more fresh, better, more equitable. Chicago, the reason why we got an 8-hour workday is because, you know, people organized and died for that right. You know, the reason why, you know, there are, you know, better and safer schools, and, you know, the reason why there's kindergarten, the reason why, like, so much exists that is really for the people has to do with, you know, working and working people of color in this city that have made it so. And so I wanted to champion those folks as well.
The names that are forgotten. I mean, you talk about at the beginning how DuSable, you know, at the incorporation of Chicago, he doesn't have a street named after him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he just is this footnote that only, like, people like Kevin Koval or people who go to, like, the Chicago History Museum might know of.
Well, you know, of course there is. I mean, you know, there's the DuSable Museum of, African-American history, that was started by Dr. Burroughs and her husband and started out of their basement. And so people have been making a point for a long time to ensure that, you know, DuSable's history, that the history of people of color, the history of working people, the history of women in this city is also championed in the same way that, you know, I mean, I, you know, you walk down this, how many Pulaskis, how many Ciceros, how many corrupt mayors and politicians.
We're a block away from Trump Tower.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And so this is history incarnate, and part of what I'm hoping that we could collectively do is break that repetition, break that cycle in order to move forward in a different kind of way.
No, absolutely. So this book is dropping in the spring, and I saw that you're going to be doing readings in every Chicago neighborhood with it. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's the plan. I'm trying to do 180 readings in 365 days. One for every year of the incorporation of the city, and yeah, at least one in every neighborhood.
Do you already have venues picked out for all those, or is it still kind of an abstract right now?
Yeah, no, I mean, we're definitely booking, and I'll kind of go anywhere. Like, I want to do, you know, I read at a lot of schools, high schools, colleges, but I'm also trying to do a lot of dive bars, a lot of backyard barbecues, a lot of family reunions. Get with the people. So there's two things. One is that, you know, a lot of the readings are going to have a workshop component where I'm essentially trying to create a larger narrative, that will incorporate. There's only 77 poems in the book, so there's giant gaps.
Right.
And part of what I want to do is have folks also add their own voice, their own experience, their own history to this larger archive that will live in perpetuity with the Chicago Public Library Foundation and the Chicago Public Library. And so I'll be doing some workshops around it, getting people to add their narrative. And then at least one time a month, you know, we're going to do like a larger event. So in April, we have the release March 4th, the launch March 4th. In April, I'm going to curate a gallery show with Chicago Trueborn of street graffiti artists and fine artists in their space. In May, we're going to do a barbecue at Kimski. My man revises Juan Kim's joint at the Marie Packaged Good and Liquors. It's going to be like a Chicago mix. Like, because, you know, Juan does like... have you had him on the show, by the way?
No.
You should have it.
I love Maria's.
Yeah, and you know the restaurant that just opened recently-ish?
Yes.
The Polish Korean fusion restaurant?
I used to live right down the block. And so here's the thing. I don't drink.
Okay.
But here's the thing.
Nor do I. Apple juice.
I never started drinking, so it's not like I have a drinking.
You want to get a shot? You want to have a shot?
Not right now.
Okay. I mean, look, maybe tonight, though.
But I bring it up because.
It could happen tonight.
I'm not somebody who's like, oh man, I can't go to a bar because I'm going to be.
Yeah,
you know. I don't have any worry about that. So for me, I only go to bars that I'm like, the vibe has to be so good that it doesn't matter that I don't drink, so I'm going to just enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And Maria's is that place. I love Maria's.
Oh, man, I love it, yeah.
And it's such a great neighborhood.
Music's good.
And you know what? It is that story. It's the story in these kind of books where it's like you have an immigrant family that, like, opened up this neighborhood place that's just as authentic as it gets, and it's all community.
Yeah.
And so it's Chicago.
You got to eat there, though. My man's food is delicious.
That's the next plan.
It's Polish-Korean fusion.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're going to have a barbecue there. So we got a bunch of things planned, you know, throughout the course of the year.
And I like that you said that, like, it sounds like this is going to almost be, like, kind of a crowdsourced, ongoing project. So if somebody wants to add their own story to this, they say, you know what, there's this great historic Chicago event that isn't represented here. Where would that go, or how will that contribute to this?
So, you know, we're building with Chicago Public Library Foundation and, of course, Young Chicago Authors and a few other organizations to begin to, you know, figure out the various technologies to build that archive. And it'll probably exist in physical space at the Chicago Public Library. And then it'll also exist online in other various formats. And I think part of the hope, so, you know, March 4th is Chicago's Incorporation Day. So March 4th, 2017, we're doing the launch. March 4th, 2018, we want to come back a year later and do a Voices of the People's History of Chicago. And so what that would mean is that, and this is all like inside of the educational philosophy and program of Howard Zinn, of course, which the book itself is, you know, modeled after. I mean, Howard was a intellectual mentor. I met him before he transitioned, and my publisher was Howard's literary agent for a very long time. And so, you know, the plan is on March 4th, 2018 to come back and over the course of the year, you know, bring some of the folks that I've met and Chicago personalities and musicians and different artists to the Metro on March 4th, 2018, and do like a, you know, larger piece about, you know, what, you know, what is the real story of the city from the people who live it, who work here, who love here, who create here, and really who are, you know, bent on creating a more just and equitable Chicago for all people.
So I'm going to put that in my calendar tonight for a year from now in 2018. But it's like,
let's get it.
You mean you bring up Metro? It's like there's so many Chicago stories endless. You could have just done a book about the history of just the Metro or the history of the music venues, like Double Door just shut down.
Yeah.
And you talk about the gentrification of Chicago.
Yeah.
Or the history of like Clark and Belmont as an alternative subculture. Like, and so there's a million stories in Chicago, you know, and I love that kind of thing. I love it's fascinating. I think that Chicago culture makes us a city that's worth staying here for versus just going to the coast.
I mean, no one should go to those. You know, first of all, those places are going to be like in the ocean very soon. And so ultimately, people should get hip, get yourself a Chicago apartment. It'll be beachfront property soon enough.
We got water here.
Yeah, we got a lot of water. We're going to have more water maybe soon.
There's a lot of things you can't see. Sahara, we're going to have to talk to her about Los Angeles.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, all the coasts are like ultimately withering because it's pumped up on, you know, plastic surgery and hot air. And, you know, really, I mean, if we could help folks who create stay, you know.
Well, I think that's something that has changed post-Chance. You know, if we look at the biggest names in Chicago music and culture pre-Chance, Fall Out Boy, Kanye West, like they left for L.A.
Yeah.
And Chance is here. And more of the post-Chance creative culture is staying here in Chicago. So
Chance wrote the foreword for the book.
Right.
You know, and he says something really, he says a bunch of things that are really beautiful. And one of the things he says, the reason why he didn't stay in L.A. is because he felt that it didn't feel right for him to grow in that environment.
Right.
That this was Chicago is the environment that he was born in. And in it, he talks about how a plant can't grow outside of their natural habitat. And so similarly, he feels like Chicago is, you know, the soil here is literally rich for him and other folks to really emerge in and to grow and prosper in. And I think that is significant. And I think it's also, it's your podcast is a part of that. You know, the more and more, it really is, like, because we need to also, like, claim our own. You know, there was a time in the history of Chicago hip-hop, even, where it was Haterville. You know, where people didn't put on for one another.
Sure.
Where now there's all these rich collaborations. People
really
rock with each other.
Everybody.
You know? And there was a time where, like, you would see a mug from Carl, and you'd be like, yo, man, I fucking hate you. You know what I mean?
I remember those days.
Yeah.
I do. I've worked in Chicago music long, and I've been doing this 19 years now, and it's like, it was not like it is now. I mean, you saw today, I'm sure, on Twitter that Chance bought all the tickets for the movie Get Out in Chatham.
Yeah,
and it's like, that was not happening. And even, like, going back, so, okay, Pumpkins are my favorite band. I grew up on Smashing Pumpkins. I was exactly the right age where if you were an angry 14-year-old white kid in the suburbs, or you didn't have to be white, but, like, if you were an angry 14-year-old teenager in the suburbs in the 90s, guess who your band was, right? Right. But it's like even the Pumpkins, I remember in 1997, wanted to do a free concert. This is when they were coming off their super fame for the Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness album. They wanted to do a free concert in Grant Park in like 1997 for all the fans. They just wanted to make it like, you don't have to buy a ticket. You just show up as a way of saying thank you to Chicago. And the city wouldn't let them. And it was such a sad, like, example of, like, bureaucracy and all these things, right? And, yeah. I mean, that's not as high stakes as a lot of the examples in the book, but it was one of those things where it's like, man, like, this great moment for culture that could have happened here, you know. And there's just a billion examples of that.
But that is, because the city gets it wrong so often, and I think culture obviously gets it right so often.
Right.
And I think the power of culture is that, you know, if you can change the culture, you can change the politic, change the policy.
Well, and that's what Chance is doing on a lot of levels right now. Yeah. So this book, it's incredible. There's great stories in here. I want to talk about a couple of the poems in here. And again, I want to leave a lot of this for people to discover themselves. But, like, for example, something that stood out to me, and I want to find it, the Mole Man.
Oh, yeah. The Mole Man B-Tapes joint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What page is that?
You're asking all the right questions. I really have no idea.
Follow along in your textbooks.
Yeah. I think 61.
61. Yeah. Okay. So just as an example here, we were talking about this before the mics were on. Of course, now there's great hip-hop resources in the city, Fake Shore Drive, Closed Sessions, on and on. Everybody knows about Chance. Everybody knows about Pivot. Everybody knows about Vic, like, on and on. But there was a time, not even that long ago, where hip-hop was underground in Chicago. It was, like, something you had to go out and seek. And you talk about in this book, you know, on page 61 here, Mole Man beat tapes. And beat tapes used to be a real thing in the city. Mole Men were putting on. They were hustling. I remember that. And you're talking about, like, going to gramophone, finding cassettes. Like, kind of talk about that time before a Fake Shore or before a Spotify, when it was just very easy to discover culture in Chicago.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had to go outside of your house. That was
you had
one,
to leave.
Right? And really, I mean, a generation of MCs were raised on Mole Man beat tapes.
Right.
You know, that was what you kind of flocked to the store for, like, hope to, you know, maybe tape off of WHPK or something like that.
Right.
And so, you know, there is a really incredible story about Chicago hip hop, and, you know, there's a documentary that's emerging Midway.
We had them on the podcast last summer.
So I'm excited, yeah. And that is that era, you know,
right.
and they're talking with a lot of the folks from that era. That was very much about trying to carve out in the city creative cultural space that was not antagonistic to people and people of color. Chicago space is at a premium. And spaces for young people of color to gather are highly contested in Chicago because ultimately that freaks the powers that be out.
Well, yeah, it used to be like there were no hip-hop shows at venues. Like, I mean, I'm just thinking around the time that this is set in the 90s. Like,
hip-hop,
I was a teenager going out then, and I can't even think of where any, like, hip-hop or people of color events would have even happened.
Well, you know, KRS-One said there used to be a time when rap music was illegal. And in the city of Chicago, yeah. You know, they banned house parties. They banned, you know,
well,
they banned raves.
Keith can't perform here now.
Keith can't perform. But even prior to that, you know,
right.
Gatherings of young people of color were criminalized, highly contested, and ultimately deemed illegal. You know, part of the reason why even, like, the rave ordinance in 2001 was passed was had to do with young people gathering in order to create celebratory spaces that honored themselves unapologetically. And those kinds of spaces ultimately are antagonistic to the dominant tropes of our society because they value different things in those spaces. And so being a Chicago kid in the, you know, early 90s and seeking out hip-hop meant that you had to become a house kid, essentially,
right.
Which is what happened to me. And, you know, the homie, you know, Boogie McLaren, who teaches dance and is a house philosopher and choreographer and incredible, like, bastion of this history and participant in the culture, talks about house's notion of radical inclusivity. That regardless of who you were, regardless of where you came from, mm-hmm. you know, house opened a creative cultural space for you to jack your body if you had a body, could move, could not move,
it
didn't matter.
And it opened up a space for people of color, for queer people. I mean, we had Dan Poliak and Lucy Stuhl from the Queen party at Smart Bar a few weeks ago on this podcast, and I went to Queen prior to that. And I worked at Boom Boom Room, you know, in my early 20s.
What, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Back in the day, because the host of the electronic music show at Q101 where I worked was one of the main producers of Boom Boom Room. So he brought me on when I was turning 21. So when I went to Queen at Smart Bar, inclusivity was the word.
Yeah.
And I was like the least fashionable, straightest, schlubbiest, like just least. Like if somebody was like, "Who doesn't belong here?" Like I had a police siren on my head. I was so brightly like not fitting in, and they couldn't have been more welcoming. And that's what I think those kind of events do really well. They're very welcoming, and they're very like, it's not about pushing people out. It's not about aggression. You know, it's about love and inclusivity.
Yeah, yeah. It's creating a whole different way to engage in the public sphere.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that is beautiful. And I think young people have done that forever. You know, and I think in this city specifically, you know, there have been movements to create these kinds of spaces that value each person and that also try to build an alternative reality or counter narrative to, you know, the terror, I would say, of, you know, the folks who remain in power.
Right. Now, something else you cover in the book, and I mean, you cover a lot. You're covering so much Chicago history.
In 525
years. 525
years.
And we're just like handpicking a couple of music moments, but you have some things that really stood out to me from the music end. You talk about Kanye when he brings up that George Bush, I mean, the famous moment where he says George Bush doesn't care about black people. And there's a lot of praise for Kanye and how his mother, Dr. Donda West, raised him right. And I thought it was an interesting contrast to have that in here versus, and I'm a Kanye apologist and I love Kanye West and I love his music, so I'm not throwing him under the bus, but he's, you know, he's really challenged a lot of people right now.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting to revisit that time where Kanye was really speaking for the underdog, he was speaking for victims, and he was speaking for the voiceless.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting contrast, I thought.
Yeah, and I'm not, I love Kanye, and I think he is a genius. I think that also he is a deeply troubled person
yeah.
who also has experienced, is experiencing, I imagine, various forms of post-traumatic stress disorder, who is, you know, still in mourning of his mother,
sure.
who is still, you know, wrestling with being a young person in and around the city of Chicago, a young man of color in and around the city
of
Chicago.
And a level of success that I don't think any of us can wrap our head around,
yeah.
that we've never lived through.
Yeah, right. I hope that he continues to invest in his creative process, because I think that will be the thing that ultimately, you know, brings him out of any fuckery that he may or may not be, you know, mired in, I guess.
No, absolutely. Something else that's covered towards the end is you talk about two really interesting moments. One is a little bit more abstract, I would imagine, or more kind of like theoretical, which is when King Louis discovered the word Chirac.
Mm-hmm.
The other is more, you know, tangible, which is the moment that Chief Keef played Lollapalooza. I was in that crowd, and that was something. Talk about those moments and putting Chief Keef and Louis in the book.
Yeah, I think they're important figures in the history of the city. I don't think if Keef, you know, Keef really opened up a venue for, in a lane for this moment in Chicago hip hop.
Yeah, and he doesn't get enough credit, I don't think, for it.
Yeah,
he gets
agree.
Very villainized, but
I agree. And I also think, like, I mean, I'm also a fan of Keef, you know.
Right.
And I also think at the time, you know, in 2011, 2012, particularly when the whole world seemed to be blaming a 17-year-old young man
for everything,
for the conditions of all of this systemic
for
fuckery,
the entire city,
seemed crazy.
Right.
You know, and so in that moment when he was at Lollapalooza, it also seemed crazy to see a sea of white people mouth the N-word without any form of, you
awareness.
Know, historical memory.
Right.
And
that,
like,
always makes me uncomfortable.
It's like, my man, it's like, that is clearly not your word. You should be slapped in the face.
Like, do you not get the whole message that's being presented here? Yeah.
No. Well, obviously, but that's also, I think that's also what whiteness dictates into a historic amnesia. And part
right.
of the reason why I'm a student of history is because I'm trying to deconstruct the very legacy and maintenance of that white supremacist culture in order to move forward in a very different space.
Well, and it's the super trite, obvious cliche of, like, if, you know, those who forget history, blah, blah, blah.
You already know.
But it's true. And
yeah.
It's obvious and trite, but it's true. All right, so this book is coming out this spring, A People's History of Chicago. It's an incredible read. It's, I think, a very passionate, empowering, heartbreaking, informative, historical read. It's all these things and more.
That's the blurb. Boom, on the back of the book.
Yeah.
There you go.
But it's incredible, man. And you're covering, you know, we just talked about some of the, like, more recent kind of pop culture moments in the book, but you're talking about, like, the history of Chicago on so many levels, you know, in the 1800s, like the White City, just so many amazing things. So I love this book. I'm really glad you wrote it. I'm so glad you came up to talk about it. And you know, this is not the last time we're going to have you on the mic. The mic is always on for you. And as things happen with this, please let us know. I want to find something I can write to make it into that next year edition.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love, that'd be dope.
Because
yeah.
I was that kid living at Clark and Belmont, like, I didn't live there, but I was living at Clark and Belmont in the 90s in that subculture, and that opened my eyes to so much. That, like, that was my...
Did you go to Medusa's?
I missed Medusa's.
Did you go to B-Side Cafe?
No.
Okay.
Right. So this is my story.
Yeah.
I was at a boarding school in middle school, and it was very sheltered boarding. So I don't usually talk about this in the podcast. Very sheltered. It was very, like, closed off. And it was cool. I loved it. I loved it because I got to live with my friends, so I got nothing negative to say. But no TV, no movies. There was no internet. The internet didn't exist.
No, of course.
I was closed off to everything. I went to Roycemore in eighth grade. Roycemore School. It's a K-12 in Evanston. Mike Kolar was there. He was a couple years older than me, which is amazing. I love that I went to school with
Mike
Kolar. He didn't know me then.
Yeah.
But you knew Mike Kolar. Even then, he was the guy on campus, right?
That's so
I was in eighth grade, and a ninth grader took me to Clark and Belmont a couple weeks into my first year, my eighth grade year there. Took me to Clark and Belmont, and after I was at this totally cut-off boarding school, we were watching, you know, Beauty and the Beast. Like, just nothing edgy. He took me into Igor's dungeon. And that was like a...
Yeah.
I mean, it was Dorothy landing in Oz. You know what I mean? It just... Everything changed.
Yeah.
So there's a million stories of Chicago and the power and the heartbreak and everything that it represents, man. And this book is an incredible document of that, A People's History of Chicago by Kevin Koval, man. You know I love talking to you.
Thank you, man.
I really appreciate you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for having me. And let's you tell stories on here and you gather stories on here. So let's think about chopping up some of those stories for that archive.
Yeah,
you know,
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and maybe we could do a special, like, you know, music history podcast where you gather some of those stories. I think that'd be dope.
Maybe we can do something. Here's a way we could mix that in. So this year is the 35th anniversary of Metro.
Yeah,
and I want to talk to Joe Shanahan this year. So maybe there's a way we can do like a People's History of Metro and Chicago.
So you should host this event because we're going to do it at the G-Man, like around.
Right.
And Joe is down to do it. So
we'll
figure it out.
We're going to make something really cool happen because my favorite podcast I've ever done was when I interviewed Joe for the 30th anniversary of Metro.
Yeah.
And there's just questions you can ask Joe Shanahan. You can't ask anybody else.
Forever, though. He's got all the stories.
You talk about Chicago history. He is living Chicago history. So, love it, man. Let's do more with this. You know I could not be a bigger fan of everything you're doing.
Thank you, bro.
Again, for coming up.
Thank you. March 4th, come out. I hope to see you. Harold Washington Library, the after parties of the Chicago Athletic Association. And also, we're in the middle of a lot of the bomb, so folks got to come. YoungChicagoAuthors.org for all the info. It's going to be good.
I love it. Kevin Koval, you're the man.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
All right.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcast. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at DynastyPodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.